I want you to take a second and just like look at whatever's right in front of you.
Yeah, literally whatever it is.
Right. Maybe it's the dashboard of your car
Yay.
Or the edge of your desk, or honestly, even just the wall across the room. Notice how incredibly vivid it feels.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it feels stable, it feels detailed, and it feels completely objectively real.
Well, I really hate to be the one to break this to you, but your brain is currently throwing away more than 99% of the visual information entering your eyes.
It is. It's just a massive illusion of completeness.
Yeah.
I mean, we walk around every day feeling like we are like a walking camera, you know, recording the world in this continuous high-definition video feed.
Right.
But the biological reality happening inside your skull right now is drastically different and, honestly, far more precarious.
It's terrifying when you think about it. We're basically operating on less than 1% of the data, and yet somehow we don't walk into walls.
Most of the time, anyway. Right. Yeah, most of the time. We can read. We can drive on the highway. We can recognize a friend's face across a crowded, dimly lit coffee shop.
Which is a miracle of biological engineering.
It really is. So the source material for today's deep dive is this mind-bending 2025 neuroscience paper. It was published in iScience by a researcher named Li Zhaoping.
Fascinating paper.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And our mission today is to figure out exactly how your brain stitches reality together despite this absolute massive information bottleneck.
And it gets even crazier than just the bottleneck.
Yes. Because even more wild, we're going to look at how scientists figured out a way to literally hack human central vision.
Right.
They basically did it by exploiting the brain's own internal speed limit. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, to understand how they did that, we have to completely change our understanding of what perception even is.
How so?
Because what we experience as seeing isn't a passive recording. It's not a camera. It is an active, somewhat desperate process of the brain constantly testing hypotheses about what might be out there in the dark.
Okay, I think we need to break this down right out of the gate because we just established that the eyes take in a ton of data, but the brain throws almost all of it away.
Right.
Mechanically speaking, if I'm looking at my coffee cup right now, where does this bottleneck actually happen?
So the bottleneck begins at the output of a region at the very back of your brain called the primary visual cortex.
Also known as V1, right?
Exactly, V1. Think of V1 as the first major processing station in your cerebral cortex. Your retinas take in gigabytes of raw light data, and the optic nerve fires all of that back to V1.
Okay, so V1 has all the data.
It does. It has this beautiful, highly detailed map of everything you're looking at. But here is the architectural flaw, or, you know, perhaps a necessary design feature.
Depends on how you look at it.
Right. The neural pathways leading out of V1, going downstream to the higher brain areas in the temporal lobe where actual object recognition happens, are highly restricted.
So it's literally a physical bottleneck.
Yes. Only a tiny fraction of what neuroscientists call impoverished feedforward signals actually make it through to the rest of the brain.
Wow. Okay. Impoverished feedforward signals.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm understanding this structure, let's try an analogy here.
Sure. Let's hear.
Let's say V1 is the bouncer at an incredibly strict, exclusive nightclub.
I like this already.
Right. So the nightclub itself is your higher brain, the part of you that actually figures out, oh, that's a coffee cup. The raw visual data is a massive crowd of people outside trying to get in.
Okay.
But the bouncer, V1, only lets a few VIP signals through the door.
Taking your nightclub analogy a step further, those VIPs who actually make it inside aren't carrying the whole story.
What do you mean?
Well, they only have fragments of information. Maybe one VIP knows the object has a curved edge, another knows it's white, another detects a shadow.
Right. So these VIPs basically stumble into the club manager's office, the higher brain, and they tell a really vague, confusing story about what's happening out on the street.
Exactly. And the manager is sitting there with this weak, partial information, trying to figure out what you were actually looking at. The manager has no choice but to make a guess.
Which feels so counterintuitive to how seeing feels.
It does. But in neuroscience, we call that guess a perceptual hypothesis. Based on those few signals, the higher brain might say, given the curved edge and the color white, I hypothesize that we are looking at a coffee cup.
But it doesn't actually know for sure.
No, because the feedforward data just isn't rich enough to know for certain. I mean, it could be a white bowl or a balled up piece of paper. So the higher brain has to double check its work.
Okay, so what does that double checking look like in the brain? Does the manager just pull out a walkie-talkie and call the bouncer at the front door?
That's a great way to picture it.
But hey, V1, you kept the rest of the crowd outside. look at the blackboard where you write everything down, and tell me, does the object have a handle?
That walkie-talkie call is the crucial mechanism here. The paper refers to it as the feedback query. The higher brain physically sends signals back down neural pathways to V1.
So it's a two-way street.
Exactly. The whole process follows a specific algorithm that Li Xiaoping calls FFVW. That stands for feed forward, feedback, verify, and reweight.
Feed forward, feedback, verify, reweight. Okay, walk me through exactly what those steps mean in real time.
Let's track a single visual moment. First, the impoverished signals are fed forward through the bottleneck to the higher brain.
That's the VIPs getting it.
Right. Then the higher brain forms its hypothesis, like, I think it's a coffee cup, and sends a feedback query down the white matter, tracks back to V1.
The walkie-talkie call.
You got it. It essentially asks V1 to check its highly detailed, retain raw data to verify the guess. If the new information matches the hypothesis, say, V1 confirms the presence of a handle, the higher brain reweights that hypothesis.
Reweights, like it makes it heavier.
Mathematically, yes. It increases its likelihood. And suddenly, boom, you consciously perceive a coffee cup.
Wow. And if it doesn't match?
If the data doesn't match, the hypothesis is vetoed and the brain basically has to guess again.
It's really hard to wrap my head around the fact that this is happening right now, like constantly.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we're talking about here is a profound shift in how we view reality.
Yeah, it really is.
It means our perception is an ongoing process of analysis by synthesis. We don't just passively absorb the world.
We're building it.
Yes. Your brain actively synthesizes a would-be reality, which is essentially a hallucination of what it thinks is there, and then violently cross-examines it against the raw data trapped in V1. You are constantly interrogating your own visual feed just to see a coffee cup.
That is wild. But hang on. If the brain has to constantly use this biological walkie-talkie system to send signals back down to V1 to verify reality, that sounds exhausting.
Oh, it is.
I mean, thinking about the computing power, the energy cost of doing that for every single leaf on a tree, every pebble on the ground, every second of the day, how does the brain afford that kind of energy expenditure?
It doesn't.
Wait, it doesn't.
No, biologically, the brain has strict energy constraints. It cannot afford to run that verification process for your entire field of view, and that is where the brain has to cheat.
Okay, I love a good biological cheat code.
This brings us to a major framework in the paper. It's called the central peripheral dichotomy theory, or CPD.
The central peripheral dichotomy, meaning the brain treats the center of our vision completely differently than the edges.
Exactly. The CPD theory posits that our visual fields have evolved distinct functional roles just to save energy.
So what does the edge do?
Peripheral vision, the edges of your sight, is mainly for looking. Its evolutionary job is to detect things just well enough to help you decide where to shift your gaze next.
Give me an example of that.
Well, if you're walking through a forest, your periphery detects a fast-moving blur. That's all it needs to do to make you turn your head.
Okay, got it.
Central vision, however, the fovea, that is for seeing, that's where you actually recognize and decode complex objects. You turn your head, center your vision on the blur, and realize it's just a falling branch, not a predator.
So because of those limited energy resources, the brain plays favorites with the walkie-talkie.
Heavy favorites. The brain directs almost all of its top-down feedback queries, those verification calls, to the central visual field. The periphery is left essentially unverified.
Are you serious?
Yep. The higher brain just accepts whatever impoverished feed-forward signals come from the periphery without ever double-checking the facts.
Okay, let me pause you there and push back on this a little bit. Because
right.
I'm looking straight ahead right now, and I can clearly see things in my peripheral vision.
Right.
If my peripheral vision is just a rough, unverified guess that never gets fact-checked by the higher brain, why doesn't the edge of my vision look like a glitchy, broken video game? Why does it look completely normal and stable?
It's a great question. The reason it doesn't look like a broken video game is because your brain's internal model of the world is a highly sophisticated prediction engine.
So it's just really good at guessing.
Exactly. Most of the time, the world obeys the laws of physics. If you are sitting in a living room, your peripheral vision expects to see a couch, a lamp, a wall.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And usually, the feed-forward signals from V1, even though they're weak, are pointing in the right direction. The brain makes a guess. And 99 times out of 100, that guess is correct enough that you don't even notice the lack of detail.
So it's just filling in the blanks with what makes statistical sense based on my memories and my environment.
Precisely.
Yeah.
However, and this is the crux of how the scientists actually tested this, if you intentionally give the brain misleading feed-forward signals.
Like signals that break the laws of physics.
Exactly. The periphery will completely fall for the trick. It will hallucinate a false reality because it simply has no mechanism to double-check the data. But your central vision, with its constant feedback query loop, will catch the error and veto the illusion.
Okay, so to prove the CPD theory, the researchers had to take this out of the theoretical realm and into the lab. They needed to find a specific visual glitch that could fool the periphery, but not the center.
Right, they needed the perfect illusion.
And I saw in the paper they used something called random dot stereograms, which I instantly thought of those old Magic Eye posters from the 90s, you know, where you stare at static until a 3D sailboat pops out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're talking about here?
It's the exact same underlying principle, yes. The researchers used stereograms to create 3D depth by showing slightly different dot patterns to your left and right eyes. This leverages something called binocular disparity.
Walk me through the mechanics of that. How does V1 translate a bunch of flat dots into 3D depth?
So in V1, you have specific neurons that are binocular, meaning they receive input from both eyes simultaneously. And these neurons are tuned to specific depths.
Like near or far?
Yes. If a pattern of dots in your left eye is slightly shifted compared to your right eye, and it indicates something is close to you, the near depth neurons fire.
Okay.
If the shift indicates something is far away, the far depth neurons fire. So the researchers set up a stereogram of a 3D disc floating in front of a background ring.
Just a standard 3D illusion.
Exactly. When you look at it normally, the near depth neurons fire, the VIP signal goes up to the higher brain, the walkie-talkie verifies it, and you see a disc floating in front of a ring.
But to test the glitch, they broke the stereogram on purpose. They created what the paper calls an anti-correlated or contrast-reversed stereogram.
This is where they play a mathematical trick on V1. They take the image going into one eye and they completely flip the contrast.
Meaning what exactly?
Every dot that was black becomes white and every white dot becomes black.
Which, just to be clear, is a physical impossibility in the real world. I mean, a shadow doesn't look pitch black in your left eye and bright white in your right eye.
No, it's entirely nonsensical to our biology. And it profoundly confuses those V1 depth neurons. Because those neurons function by summing up the light intensity from both eyes, when you hit them with this contrast-reversed pattern, the math literally breaks down.
So what happens?
The neuron that is supposed to fire for near depth gets confused by the flipped colors, its response profile flips, and it actually fires a signal for far depth.
Wait, so V1 sends a massive incorrect VIP signal up to the Heil brain saying, hey, the disc is behind the ring. It sends a reverse depth signal.
Yes. Now let's track what happens in the peripheral vision first. The higher brain gets this bad feed-forward data. Disc is behind the ring.
Okay.
But remember, in the periphery, there is no feedback query. The higher brain just accepts it. It says, okay, if V1 says it's behind the ring, I'll perceive it as behind the ring, and you experience the reverse depth illusion.
But the real test is the central vision. What happens when you look directly at this broken stereogram with the center of your eye?
In central vision, the manager picks up the walkie-talkie. The higher brain gets the signal that the disc is behind the ring, but it says, hold on, let me verify that.
It actually checks its work.
Right. It sends a query down to V1 to check the monocular data, the specific raw input from each individual eye. The feedback query looks at the V1 blackboard and realizes, wait a minute, a black dot in the left eye is paired with a white dot in the right eye.
Which it knows is wrong.
Exactly. It realizes that's a contrast-reversed image, which is physically impossible.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's exactly like a bank's automated fraud detection system.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, think about it. The peripheral vision is just a lazy algorithm. Like
right.
A weird charge comes through from a foreign country, and the periphery just blindly approves the transaction. That's the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
But your central vision is the actual fraud department. It pauses the transaction, calls the customer to verify, realizes the signature on the receipt is a complete fake, and immediately blocks the charge.
That is exactly it. In biological terms, that fraud department is the feedback loop successfully vetoing the illusion. The bad hypothesis is thrown out, and when you look right at the contrast-reversed stereogram with your fovea, you don't see any depth at all.
You just see static.
Right? Yeah, just flat static.
Yeah.
The illusion is completely broken.
Which is just an amazing proof of the theory. the periphery falls for the illusion because it doesn't check its work, and the center is immune because it does. But Li Xiaoping didn't stop there.
Not even close, because establishing that baseline set up the ultimate challenge in this paper, the main experiment.
This is the hacking part.
Yes. If central vision relies on a physical feedback loop, like a literal electrical signal traveling down the brain's white matter to V1 and back to veto the illusion, could you move fast enough to sever that loop?
Could you literally outrun the brain?
Exactly. Could you hack human central vision and force it to hallucinate exactly like the periphery?
So if the bank's fraud department is calling down to verify the signature, can we basically burn the receipt before they pick up the phone?
That was the goal. To do this, Xiaoping brought in 13 observers to view these broken stereograms. But instead of a static image, they used a technique called visual backward masking.
What does that mean in practice?
They made the stereograms dynamic. Mm-hmm. They flashed new frames of random dots on the screen, keeping the same 3D depth layout, but changing the exact positions and colors of the dots rapidly.
How rapidly are we talking here?
Every 10 milliseconds. Delta T equals 10 milliseconds.
Wait, 10 milliseconds? I mean, they can't even blink that fast. Walk me through exactly what is happening in the brain in that tiny window of time.
It is an absurdly fast window, but it's all about the physical travel time of action potentials in the brain.
Oh.
So the central vision takes in the first frame.
Okay.
The confused V1 neurons send up the bad reverse depth signal.
Yeah.
The higher brain receives it and says, let me verify that. It fires the electrical feedback query down the pathways to V1 to check those specific black and white dots.
But because the frames on the screen are updating every 10 milliseconds, by the time that electrical walkie-talkie query physically arrives at V1,
the original dots are already gone.
Oh my God.
The synaptic activity from the first frame has been completely overwritten by the new dots. The V1 blackboard has been wiped clean.
So the verification data is just physically gone.
Yes. The veto fails. The fraud department calls down, but the evidence has been shredded. And for the very first time, the observer's central vision fell for the reverse depth illusion.
That is bonkers.
They looked directly at the center of the screen, and because the feedback loop was disrupted by sheer speed, they hallucinated the disc floating behind the ring. They hacked the visual cortex by simply outrunning its internal communication system.
That honestly gives me chills. They found the glitch in the matrix? But they didn't just break the system, did they? They actually measured the speed limit of our reality. The paper mentions a secondary experiment with 10 observers where they varied the speeds of the flashing frames.
Yes, they wanted to find the exact ping speed of the brain's verification system. Like, how long does the fraud department actually take to make the call?
What did they find?
They tested frames flashing at 20, 40, 50, and 100 milliseconds. What they found was that, 100 milliseconds, the illusion disappeared again. The brain had plenty of time to send the query, read the blackboard, and catch the fraud.
Okay, so 100 is too slow to hack it.
Right. But when they dropped the frame duration to between 40 and 50 milliseconds, the central vision started falling for the illusion again.
So that's the latency. That 40 to 50 millisecond window is the time it takes for a perceptual check to travel from the higher brain down to V1.
And what's fascinating here is how the behavioral science beautifully aligns with neurobiology.
How so?
We already knew from electrophysiological recordings in macaque monkeys that there is roughly a 30 to 40 millisecond latency between feed-forward and feedback visual cortical responses.
Wow.
So this psychological trick in human subjects perfectly mapped onto the biological hardware delay we see in primate brains.
I want you to really think about what that means for your daily life. Your entire sense of a stable, verified, objective reality relies entirely on the physical world holding still for at least 40 milliseconds.
It's humbling, really.
If the world around you changes faster than that, your brain's internal fraud detection literally can't keep up, and you will start seeing things that aren't there.
It highlights just how fragile our grip on perception really is. And, you know, it's important to note this isn't just about depth perception.
Oh, really? It affects other things, too.
Yeah. The paper touches on something called the flip-tilt illusion, which involves the brain misinterpreting the orientation of lines, whether they are leaning left or right, using a similar contrast reversing trick. V1 has specific columns of neurons dedicated to orientation, and they can be hacked the exact same way.
So this bottleneck glitch, this reliance on the 40 millisecond feedback loop, it affects multiple types of visual features. It's not just a quirk of seeing 3D, it's a fundamental architectural feature of how our minds are built.
It's a feature of efficiency. We basically sacrifice total accuracy for the ability to process a complex, chaotic world in real time.
Okay, let's pull all this together. If we step back from the neuroscience, you know, from the 10 millisecond stereograms and the neural pathways, what is the core takeaway from this deep dive into Li Xiaoping's research?
The core takeaway is that being visually well-informed about your environment is not a passive state. It is an incredibly active, strenuous, ongoing process.
An analysis by synthesis.
Exactly. You are effectively blind to 99% of the visual world at any given moment. Your brain is desperately throwing out hypotheses to keep you moving, and it relies entirely on this microscopic 40 millisecond foveal feedback loop in your central vision to save you from living in a world of glitchy, reversed, nonsensical illusions.
So what does this all mean? It's exhausting just thinking about the sheer amount of processing happening just to look at a wall.
It really is.
But there is one final, incredibly provocative thought buried in the source material that we have to talk about before we wrap up, and it has to do with artificial intelligence.
Yes, I am so glad you brought this up. This is perhaps one of the most fascinating implications of the whole paper.
It's the part that really stuck with me.
We are currently building modern AI and deep learning neural networks, specifically convolutional neural networks, that are incredibly good at recognizing objects and images. But the architecture of these AI vision models is fundamentally different from ours.
In what way?
They are almost entirely feed-forward systems.
Meaning they don't have the bouncer, they don't have the V1 information bottleneck that forces them to guess.
They don't have the bottleneck, and more importantly, they completely lack the foveal feedback query loop.
Walkie-talkie.
Exactly. They do not perform the analysis by synthesis verification that human central vision relies on. They just take the data, process it sequentially through their layers, and spit out an answer.
Which raises a massive, slightly terrifying question for you to ponder long after this deep dive's over.
Definitely.
If AI vision models are purely feed-forward, are they actually seeing the world the way human beings see? Or have we, in all our technological brilliance, essentially just built a giant digital version of human peripheral vision?
Right. A system that recognizes broad patterns incredibly quickly, but never actually possesses the architectural ability to double-check its own hallucinations.
Which explains a lot, honestly.
When you think about how often AI models confidently present false information, it's an architectural parallel that should make all of us stop and think.
It really should. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. The next time you look closely at something, the dashboard, your desk, your coffee cup, take a moment to appreciate the rapid-fire 40-millisecond conversation happening inside your own visual cortex, just to let you see it.
It's doing a lot of heavy lifting.
It really is. Your brain might be throwing away 99% of the data, but somehow, it's still keeping you in the light. Until next time.